So who can tell us what this chapter 17 is about? Is it about transcendental faith or material faith?
Material.
Material faith, yes, more. Only this? Only material faith?
Everything is contingent on the world.
The what?
It's contingent on the nature that manifests our actions and attitude.
Okay. Yes. The conditioning, activities in the mode, and how is this connected to the previous chapter? Follow the Shastra. And by following the Shastra, we adopt a process of purification and elevation which leads to transcendence. It's the path of transcendence. So in this chapter, he's telling us about those who do not follow the Shastra or who do not follow it very properly. So when we follow the Shastra, either by following the principles of Varnashram Dharma, or by simply following the principle of bhakti, and then we elevate ourselves and we act transcendentally. Or at least we are situated on the path leading to transcendence. But if we do not follow these things, then we are going to be completely under the modes of nature. And plus, under the modes of nature, there is always a tendency that it's going to go down, unless we make a little effort. Okay? And what else did we hear? We heard of the different types of faith. Where do they arise from? Why is there faith in goodness, passion and ignorance? It comes from the nature. Mm-hmm. We have a specific type of nature which is generally either in goodness, passion and ignorance. And everything we do is going to be according to our nature. Yes. Anything else?
This nature can be changed.
Oh yes, very good news. This nature can be changed by
association with the bona fide spiritual master.
By association with the bona fide spiritual master. Yes, the nature can be changed. Okay. What is faith? Real faith.
Real faith is faith in Krishna.
It's faith, yeah, real faith is faith in Krishna. Understanding that there is a God, that is faith. The beginning of that understanding that there is, it's an understanding which is mixed with a sort of almost transcendental perception that some people, they know there is a God, they have a faith. There's some deep understanding within them that there is a God. Such faith is in the mode of pure goodness, when we understand that there is a God. And when we understand that there is a God, then we understand the scriptures come from Him, and we believe in the scriptures. We are convinced that if we follow the scriptures, we are going to elevate ourselves. But when faith is covered by the modes of nature, then instead of having faith in God, then we choose many other objects of worship, such as the demigods. Who worships the demigods?
Men in
Those who are in goodness, yes. They worship the demigods. And those who are in passion? They worship the demons. All they worship, yes. A film star. Yes, a film star are considered demons by Prabhupada. Men, powerful men in this world. Yes. And those with ignorance, whom do they worship?
Ghosts.
Evil. Yes. All kinds of lower entities. So Krishna continues in the next two verses, 5 and 6. He describes those who are against the Vedic practices. He's going to enter the field of describing the other items, different things that are in the mood, in the modes. So let us hear here these verses 5 and 6. Ashastra vihitam. You know, this is how those who are doing things which are not in the scriptures, who are against the practices, they are demons. Ashasravitam ghoram tapyante ye tapojana dambha. Those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures. They are called here ghoram, some very harmful kind of austerities, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish, and who torture the material elements of the body as well as the supersoul dwelling within, are to be known as demons. So Srila Prabhupada explains, there are persons who manufacture modes of austerity and penance which are not mentioned in the scriptural injunctions. So, what would be some example of this that Prabhupada gives? What is some example of some austerity? Yes. Yeah, the person who tried to break the Guinness Book of Records by jumping 500 times from a parachute within 24 hours. Yes, this is austerity in the mode of ignorance. Yes.
And there is a one particular time, you know, they do yajna. They walk up, you know, when they play in another country, some of these Brahmana, they do yajna for the cricket.
Yes, they do yajna for the cricket team. That's why they won. That's how they won. Otherwise, no way. Cricket team. Okay, yes. What does Prabhupada mention in the purport here? Political reasons. Fasting for political reasons, fasting for social purpose. Normally, austerities are meant for spiritual advancement. But this is not for spiritual advancement. Maybe we should give them the verse here. Anyway, who knows what's going on with them. But fasting should be either for spiritual advancement or that's transcendental fasting, or in goodness, that is fasting for good health, for health. For health purpose, we can fast. So this verse condemns this kind of austerities, all kinds of austerities which are meant. Srila Prabhupada related this verse also to the activities of the Gandhians, Mahatma Gandhi and his followers. They did all kinds of austerities for political purpose. So Prabhupada was claiming that is it better after or during the British rule? Bhaktisiddhanta was against. This is not what has to change. It's not the ruler that has to change, it's the consciousness. We have to change the consciousness. So this is some examples of this kind of austerities by the demons who do not have any spiritual purpose. What is their impetus? What is their impetus to practice these austerities? Pride. Yes, pride, false prestige, lust, attachment. This is what Krishna said, dambha, ahankara, samyukta, kama, raga, and all that. So this is, actually Srila Prabhupada in his purport says that they are actually in an abnormal mental condition, achetasaha, which means unconscious, and here Srila Prabhupada translates unconscious by insane. They're actually insane. Because they are completely bewildered. They don't know what is the goal of life. So they will do any nonsense for any nonsense purpose. It is actually... what is the result of such austerities? Or what result does it bring, this kind of austerity? This kind of austerity in the mode of ignorance by demons. What is the result, Krishna says? They torture the body, yes, and what is the result?
The Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Lord is displeased, so that's one thing.
Force them to take birth in the womb of a demonic
person. Okay, they are forced, meaning that these are the ones, you remember, these are, who can torture his own body? Only one who is envious, Krishna says. They are envious of their own selves. So these are the same type of people that Krishna spoke about before, those demons who are envious of the Lord, envious of their own selves. They are the ones who can do this kind of austerities, which torture the body. So what is the result of torturing the body? This kind of austerity. What does it bring? Bad health, yeah, they ruin their health. Sometimes they die, because it's death. And when they die, Krishna takes them to some lower species. Yeah? Because they themselves practically committed suicide. So to damage the body and endanger the life, that is demonic. What does... Yes?
Fasting for a physical reason became more of a passion or ignorance?
Well, it's demoniac. So it's a mixed passion, ignorance. But it's definitely it's based on ignorance. Right, you don't understand how the super soul will be tortured. So how can we understand this statement of Krishna here? Let's discuss that. How do we understand that the super soul is being tortured as well? What does it mean? Displeased, yeah, that's one way to understand. The Lord is displeased. Because the living entity is going the other way. The Lord wants us, He has made so many arrangements so that we could advance, progress. He gave us the Shastra, He comes Himself, He gives you His instructions, He sends the devotees, His messengers, and these people, they neglect everything. And they do something else. Though the super soul, so the super soul is not really suffering, because we know that the super soul is standing on a different level of existence, and due to his having no interest in material affairs, he is never entangled, and he doesn't actually suffer, but he's displeased because things are going against his will. So he is displeased. It's going against his will. And they lose his mercy. Why did the Lord come with us in this world?
To help us,
to make sure we come back, and this fool is going the other way. So the Lord cannot give his mercy. So he's suffering in that way, that he cannot fulfill his purpose of accompanying his soul. He wanted to bless and he cannot bless. We must understand, I'll give you an example to understand the statement of Krishna here, that they torture the super soul within. It's not a literal meaning. It's the same as when Krishna says in the Upanishad, Atmaha. You remember? Atmaha. The killer of the soul. So obviously the soul cannot be killed. And obviously the super soul cannot suffer. So it means to say that it's going against the order that Krishna has planned, and it's negative for the living entity. Prabhupada says these acts are not approved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he says that those who engage in them are demons. Such demonstrations are insults to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they are enacted in disobedience to the Vedic scriptural injunctions. The word achetasaha is significant in this connection. Persons of normal mental condition must obey the scriptural injunctions. So at the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada still makes a provision that there is always a possibility to change and to reverse everything. If, however, such persons are fortunate enough to be guided by a spiritual master who can direct them to the path of Vedic wisdom, they can get out of this entanglement and ultimately achieve the supreme goal. So they are not condemned. More merciful than the super soul himself is the spiritual master and the representative of the spiritual master, and they will go out of their way to somehow rectify those who are of demoniac nature. So following this, Krishna is going to analyze several things in the modes. Food, sacrifices, austerities, and charity. He will analyze all these things. Why is he going to do that? Why is he going to analyze all these things? So that we can discriminate, yes. So that we can recognize. Text 7. Aharastvapi sarvasya trividho bhavati priyaha yajnyasya hasta tadanam tesham vedanimam shrinu. Even the food each person prefers is of three kinds, according to the three modes of material nature. The same is true of sacrifices, austerities, and charity. Now hear of the distinctions between them. So three kinds, again, in the modes. And the people will be attracted. According to our nature, we are going to prefer. The word is used, priya, priya, priya. That which is dear. So will be, if one is in goodness, then foods in goodness will be very dear to him. If one is in passion, then food in passion. Oh, I like very much chili, hot chili. Why is this? Because my whole nature is in passion. So there will be an attraction for the different objects in the modes. So Krishna explains us here, those who can understand analytically what kind of performances are in what modes of material nature are actually wise. Those who consider all kinds of sacrifice or food or charity to be the same cannot discriminate, and they are foolish. So not everything is same in this world, and we have to learn. That's why Krishna has given these chapters on the modes, to train us to discriminate among the modes. Because if we follow the mode of ignorance, we will go down. If we follow the mode of passion, we will go down. We must learn to recognize the symptoms and stay away from the symptoms of the lower modes. Prabhupada explains that some people, they preach that philosophy, yatamat tatapat. Everything is the same, do whatever, but it is not. There is a different result according to how we act, how we eat, how we speak. It creates different reactions, and the reactions are either elevating or degrading. So here, text number 8. This is food in the mode of goodness. Number 7 was an introduction, general introduction. And now we are hearing food in the three modes. Ayusatva balarogya sukha priti vivardhana rasya siddha stira vridhya ahara sattvika priya. Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart.
I was just thinking of this.
You're thinking what? Cholesterol. That's what the materialist will say. This is the cause of cholesterol. Juicy, fatty. This is the foolish, materialist in the mode of ignorance. No, because the fat which is mentioned here is not the fat that gives cholesterol. This is meant to come for pure ghee. It increases the brain substance, not the cholesterol. You can see distorted understanding born from the modes of nature. So here Krishna gives us the effect of that food and the qualities. So what are the effects that we see here? If we eat this kind of food, first let's see the qualities maybe. What are the qualities? Juicy. Meaning juicy is the opposite of dry. Very dry food that you put it in the mouth and it it dries the mouth and there's no more water in the mouth and you can't taste what it is not, it burns your mouth. And sometimes some kind of food like this, it's a chickpea flour, something which is little passionate, or it has a tendency to just absorb all the water. So it should be juicy. Note is to be made that this refers to vegetarian food. It should be juicy. And then fatty. Oh, that is very nice. Snigdha, it says, juicy, rasya, snigdha. So fat refers to natural fat from milk. The milk, the ghee, the cream, all these things are very, very much in the mood of goodness. Wholesome, natural, and pleasing to the heart. That means when you eat it, what is the heart here? It refers to that they will pacify the mind. After eating that food, you just feel happy, satisfied, little intoxicated. It is good. You feel good. After eating this, you're peaceful, happy, satisfied. Life is very nice. Happiness and well-being. This will be created by these foods. So these are, Krishna speaks of the effects here. It means it increases the duration of life. So if we eat foods in the mode of goodness, we will live longer. Or at least we will fulfill the duration of our existence. If we eat the wrong way, we will shorten the duration of our existence. Then sattva means it purifies one's existence. Or Bhadeva Vidyabhushan says it gives willpower. It gives power. But based on the mode of goodness, strength, bala, arogya means health, otherwise means immunity. It will help us fight disease. Sukha, happiness, priti, satisfaction. So these are the characteristics and the effects of such foods. In other words, such foods are pure in nature. They are pure and they bring purity in the body and in the mind. Then text 9. So who felt happy reading this description? Juicy, fatty, wholesome. You're not sure what is in category here? That's a sign. It's a sign. Who understood what is this category here? Let's see if you understand the next one. Katvam lalavana tyushna tikshna rushna vidhayina. So again here the qualities and effect, and this time of the food in the mode of passion. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery, and disease. So let's see who is attracted here. Bitter? Who likes bitter food? Actually, here it doesn't say just bitter, sour, salty. Even in the foods in the mode of goodness, all these tastes will be there. But here there is one word which is used, is ati, which means too much. And Srila Prabhupada has translated this, too bitter, too sour. And you have to add this too to everything, too salty, too hot, too pungent, too dry. Everything which is in excess, that is the mode of passion. Something is little bitter in the mode of goodness, you can also eat Karela. Yes. But not when it's too bitter. And then too sour. That will disrupt the stomach. Too salty. Some people, they always keep the salt next to their plate. And more, 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 more. Prabhuji, salt, salt. Namak, and we add more salt, we add more salt. So we should know that every time we add the salt, what are we adding?
Passion.
We are adding passion. I feel a little low if we put salt. Or similarly, somebody drinks tea and he says, sugar, sugar. And he will put two more spoons of sugar. What is he adding? Passion. And what's the next one? Pungent. Prabhuji, mirchi, mirchi. I want chili. Yes. Why is there no chili? Because it's in the mode of passion. It's not good for study. So that which is too hot means this is toka. There are six different kinds of tastes. So, this is here, the bitter, the sour, salty, pungent, and what is the other one? Astringent. Astringent, I think, will be dry here. Astringent. The kind of thing that you put it in the mouth and it leaves a strange type of feeling in the mouth. So a little bit of everything is good, and too much of everything or too much of something is passion. Does it come under passion? Yeah. It's good for digestion. Yes, chili should be used like in the hot summer when it's very hot. So usually when it's too hot, the fire of digestion is counteracted and it gets a little low. So at that time, you know, those who cook according to Ayurveda, in the past, this was all, in all the households, they knew how to cook according to the weather. So they wouldn't eat like rice in the cold winter, you know. But they wouldn't take chili in the winter. It's bad for the stomach to take chili in the winter, because in the chili it will increase the fire of digestion. And in the winter the fire of digestion is usually already high, because the temperature of the body is low. So from within, naturally the fire of digestion increases. The body needs food in the winter to counteract, to create heat in the body. So at that time, the fire is already there. You don't have to put chili. In the summer, it is good to take, but little chili. Not too much chili. This kind of chili that, it says you're burning. That you put it and it burns your throat. Especially that which is katha, the things which are sour, it burns the throat. Chili burns the tongues. And then when it's in the stomach, it also burns the stomach. So that is, you know, you have overdone it when you have these kind of symptoms. A little is good. And what is the result if we eat too much chili? Here it says dukkha, shoka, amaya, amaya. There is dukkha. What is dukkha? There is distress. What is the distress? Mental distress, that is shoka. Shoka. Some bodily distress, and especially they say that this means there is distress during eating itself. You know, you eat the chili, and if it's a real hot one, then there is suffering. Then you have to drink water, you have to cool down. So, this is distress while eating. Or sometimes you eat things which are too sour, as I said, it dries the throat. So, there is a distress which comes. If you eat food which is too hot, those who are passionate, you know, they want the tea. Hot, 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 hot. So hot. And then ice cream. First you have ice cream, then tea. Or first tea and then ice cream. So this is all in the mood of passion and ignorance. Very bad for the stomach. You know, stomach is there, innocent, sitting, ready to receive the food. You know. And then you put a red chili inside. Oh, what's that? Okay. It's producing all kinds of things to digest the chili. And then ice cream. Oh my God, what's next now? Super cold. So that's the opposite. And then now what it does is that it kills. When we eat super cold things, it kills the fire of digestion. Cold drinks, all these things are in the mode of passion and ignorance, but mostly passion. It's in passion. Cold things, they kill the fire of digestion. And super hot things, too hot, they damage the digestive system. Usually you can't even swallow them. They burn the lips, they burn the tongue, they burn the throat. And if it reaches the stomach, then you're done. You develop ulcer from eating a pungent food and things which are too hot, too cold. So it will bring misery. Immediately, and afterwards also, you finished eating, but your tongue is still burning. After eating, it says shoka, it means it brings depression, anxiety. That Prabhupada said also, the person who cooks is very important. If the person who cooks was in the mode of passion, then after eating, of course, the food is salty, the food is too sweet, the food is too hot, and after eating it, your own mind goes in passion. So, this is the result here, which is called shoka. It doesn't help. And then amai, if you look into the Ayurvedic side, it means disease. It brings disease. It creates disorder in the digestive functions and disorder of the blood. Next is 10. It's getting worse. Yata yamam gatarasam bhuti parushitam chaya uchishtam avichamedhyam bhojanam tamasapriyam. So this is also priya. Some people like other things. What do they like? Food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten. Food that is tasteless, decomposed and putrid. It says that puti means bad smell. Food that has a bad smell. It stood there for quite some time, and the person gets like, take it, okay, and eats it. Food consisting of remnants, you know, somebody was eating, left his plate there, you come around and say, oh, some food. No. consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness. Prabhupada said the purpose of food is to increase the duration of life, purify the mind and aid bodily strength. That is its only purpose. But people, instead of eating to live, they live to eat. Because their senses are so agitated. And here when the senses are covered with the mode of ignorance, so this is what happens here, they eat food which is amedhyam, which means impure. So this is the opposite of food in the mode of goodness. Food in the mode of goodness was pure. But here, this is impure. What does it mean, impure? It means all these things, plus Prabhupada says untouchable. What are untouchable things?
Meat.
Yeah, meat. Non-vegetarian food. Meat, fish, eggs, and onion also. Onion, garlic, which are in the mode of ignorance. And what else? Drinks, alcoholic drinks, liquor. Prabhupada puts all this in, this is all in the mode of ignorance. Intoxicating substances, all this is food in the mode of ignorance. Even mushrooms, mushroom. You know mushroom? How do you call mushroom in Hindi?
And they put on the seed, on the top of sweets sometimes.
On top of sweets? Yes, because the mushrooms grow without absorbing the light of the sun. Now we heard that all the foods, they grow with the light of the sun and they grow with the light of the moon. But mushrooms don't do like this. Mushrooms grow in darkness, underground, under trees, in the cellar, some place underground without light, in the darkness, the mushrooms grow. So they are considered to be food in the mode of ignorance. However, Prabhupada was not, he said you can't offer them to the deities. But in some countries, you know, they eat lots of mushrooms. So they asked Prabhupada what to do with our mushrooms, our favorite dish. And so Prabhupada didn't say that it's such a terrible thing to eat mushrooms, but they can't be offered, so can't offer that. So we should not eat food which has been sitting for long, long time. But Srila Prabhupada makes it clear that all this refers to non-prasada. Once the food has been offered to Krishna, then it should not be considered in goodness, passion or ignorance. It has been purified and it becomes transcendental food. But still we should be careful, even with prasada. So in the case of prasada, if it has been sitting for 6 hours in the month of July, you remember the month of July, it was hot and humid, and any food which stays after 3 hours, Prabhupada said, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, naturally it will smell. It starts decomposing. So it is prasada, which means that it has not taken on the quality of tamas, because it's prasada. So it's not tamasic. But for the body, it is not to be eaten, because it will create disease. So it's not tamasic, but physically it will have a bad effect. But spiritually, it is pure. It is never contaminated. Who would like to eat decomposed food anyway? You have to have a certain taste to eat something which smells bad. Prasadam, Prabhupada, so he explains that there are these three qualities in the food, but we should not just go for this one, that one, or that one. In other words, here we should say, oh, I should eat food in the mood of goodness. But that is not sufficient. We should not eat food in the mood of goodness. We should eat prasadam. And prasadam should be in the mood of goodness because we offer it to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu, or Krishna, but Vishnu in general is the deity governing the mode of goodness. And we heard all the time, everywhere, that if we want to worship Krishna properly, we should elevate ourselves to the mode of goodness. We should offer him things which are in the mode of goodness. He will accept this better than things in the mode of passion. And since we have to cultivate the mode of goodness, so it is better to have prasadam which is based on the mood of goodness in its nature. But prasadam can also, here it says that tamasic food consists of remnants. What is remnants? Something that somebody has eaten from. Somebody started eating and left the plate. And someone else comes and says, wow, feast. You eat the remnants of someone else. So this usually, it is considered not so good. This is in the mode of ignorance. Because when we eat, you know, somehow or other, we contaminate the food. The food is pure when it comes, but as soon as you start eating, you contaminate the food. Because there are so many bacteria in the mouth, and you touch with your hand and everything, it becomes contaminated very soon. And the energy of the person who is eating also goes in the food. All the consciousness is looking at the food either with greed or with disgust or with whatever feelings. He's looking at the food, and the person is either tamasic or passionate or in goodness or whatever. But the consciousness of the person goes in the food, the physical contamination goes in the food. So when a second person starts eating that, so he will get the remnants, which are not just the physical food on the plate, but is the consciousness of that person and the disease of that person, everything he will get. So, prasadam, however, Prabhupada explained, is also remnants. It's the remnants of Krishna. But we are happy to eat that. Because Krishna has no disease. We know he is pure, uncontaminated. So, we eat his remnants. And we also eat the remnants of the pure devotee, of the advanced devotees. We can also eat the remnants. But usually we should eat their remnants with their permission. It's not advised to steal the prasadam.
Sometimes when I want to eat, they have something contained. How should I do it?
Sometimes some advanced devotee has a physical disease. Yeah, so she says it's like the bubbles on the Ganges. Yes. So either you can honor just very, very light, one grain or something, some very small part and that. And And again, it's not, you know, we say also that you should take the permission of the person to eat the prasadam. It is understood that in general the disciples of a spiritual master, they have license. That unless their guru said, I don't want anybody to eat my remnants. If the guru says that, then no one can take. But in general, the spiritual master is he lets his disciples eat his remnants, so you don't have to ask the permission all the time. But if someone is sick and all, you may ask the permission. Can we take your remnants? There was a story, and remnants means remnants of food. You know, there was a horrible story in, I think it's in New Vrindavan. The one time Prabhupada was sick. Prabhupada was very sick, and you know, people were so ignorant in the Western countries. So everybody was fighting for Prabhupada's remnants anyway. But they were taking Prabhupada's remnants. But Prabhupada had a cough. And Prabhupada had asked for a spittoon. You know, a pot where you just keep spitting all the time. So Prabhupada was sick, so he was, and according to Ayurveda, when you have a cough, when you have mucus, you should not swallow. If you swallow it, it will give disorder to the rest of the body. You have to spit out. So Prabhupada was having his thing, and he was spitting the whole day. He was spitting. And at some point, that devotee came to, the devotee had seen, oh Mahaprasada. That's what he thought in his mind. Oh Maha, this is Maha Maha. Nobody's going to fight for this one. He must have been controlled a little bit by the mode of ignorance. And he actually decided to eat the spit, and Prabhupada came to know about it. He was so upset. He said, you have no discrimination. This is not Mahaprasadam. This is not Prasadam. So, you have to be careful.
How to apply Krishna consciousness in a broad way.
You know, so if you, you know, you go to Poland and you can't offer potatoes, what are you going to offer? Isn't it?
Yeah.
What are you going to offer to the deity? That's the only thing that grows. Potatoes? Yeah, but it's there. In some countries, there is only potato. Lots of potatoes. Cabbage. Potato, cabbage. That's all that grows. So if you can't offer that, then what? Therefore, Prabhupada taught us we can do halu gauranga. So we can cook halu gauranga. We can cook halu chutney. We can do halu, halwa. Yeah, carrot halwa, but potato halwa also. So, yes, according to Srila Prabhupada, we can use whatever vegetables we find locally. Only a few vegetables, Prabhupada has said, we don't use. Like onion, garlic, that we know. And there are something, turnips, some kinds of vegetables which are, in the West, there are also vegetables which are of the family of onion and garlic, but they don't look like it, but they are. Like the long ones. What do you call it?
Leeks.
Leeks. Yeah. Leeks. Leeks is a long thing like this with green leaves and it's white. But it's actually an onion.
There is a plant of onion.
Yes. It's in the family. Yes. So there are just a few things we don't use. Otherwise for Krishna we can offer anything. So Prabhupada says a few things in this purport that we will read. Fatty foods, as mentioned in the 8th verse, have no connection with animal fat obtained by slaughter. Animal fat is available in the form of milk, which is the most wonderful of all foods. Milk, butter, cheese, and similar products give animal fat in the form which rules out any need for the killing of innocent creatures. So we should see in the food in the mode of goodness that we should minimize, you know, the distress to other creatures and particularly the animals. Foods in the mode of passion which are bitter, too salty or too hot or overly mixed with red pepper, where did she go? Cause misery by reducing the mucus in the stomach, leading to disease. Foods in the mode of ignorance or darkness are essentially those that are not fresh. Any food cooked more than 3 hours before it is eaten, except prasada, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. Remnants of food may be eaten only when they are part of a meal that was first offered to the Supreme Lord, or first eaten by saintly persons, especially the spiritual master. Otherwise, the remnants of food are considered to be in the mode of darkness, and they increase infection or disease. But prasadam, Prabhupada says, is antiseptic. So we don't have anything to fear. Number 11, now we change topic. After the food, we are going to hear about yajna. Yajna in goodness. Aphalakam chedir yajyo vididishto yajyate yashtavyame veiti manaha samadhaya sasatrikaha. Of sacrifices, the sacrifice performed according to the directions of scripture. Vidhi dishto, according to the directions of scripture. As a matter of duty, by those who desire no reward. Aphala akamsha, there is no desire for fruit, is of the nature of goodness. One should go to a temple or church as a matter of duty, offer respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and offer flowers and eatables. So is this what we do? This is very bare. This is goodness. This is not transcendence. It's not directly, it's the beginning maybe of bhakti, or it's when we have a bad day, we go to the temple out of duty. But otherwise, do devotees go to the temple out of duty? No. They don't go out of duty. Duty is goodness. You go to the temple because they want to see Krishna. They are attracted. They like going to see Krishna. They miss Krishna. There is a personal relationship there. So that's why they go. But here we are in the mode of goodness. Everyone thinks that there is no use in going to the temple just to worship God. Yeah, God is everywhere. Why should I go to the temple? But worship for economic benefit is not recommended in the scriptural injunctions. One should go simply to offer respect to the deity. That will place one in the mode of goodness. So Prabhupada here is mostly speaking against worship in the mode of passion, in which one goes to the temple to ask for something. No, we should not ask for anything. I remember when I first went in Maharashtra to the temple of Lord Vitthala. That was what the devotees of Vitthala were saying, is that we go to see him. We are not allowed to ask for anything. They've been educated like this from the time of birth, that when you go to see Vitthala, he's standing with his two hands like this on his hips, and he's waiting for his devotees to go and see him. He's waiting for his devotees to go and see him. And he is happy to see them, and they are happy to see him. And that's all. So there is, it's forbidden by his devotees to go and ask for something. This is in the mode of passion. To go and ask, and especially ask for material things. So this is condemned here. If one wants to be placed in the mode of goodness, then when we perform yajna, we should do it out of duty. Of course, the higher yajna is out of love, but otherwise it's out of duty. And this will place us in goodness. Then there is yajna in passion. Avisandhaya tu palam samharam api chevayat ijyate bharata shrajita tam yajnam vidhirajasam. But the sacrifice performed for some material benefit. Matlab, this means avisandhaya tu phalam. We want the fruit. The other one was apalam. No fruit. We are not desiring any fruit. But this one is, we want some material benefit. Or, for the sake of pride, dambha artham. O chief of the Bharatas, you should know to be in the mode of passion. So, people want some material benefit, but there are others who sacrifice for the sake of pride. What does that mean? By out of pride, they perform sacrifice?
To show people.
To show, yeah, just to show. Just to show how much money they have, or just to show how religious they are. So that is sacrifice in the mode of passion. So in general, you will find the same qualities that we studied before. Goodness involves duty and regulation. Passion involves the fruitive mentality, and usually ignorance will involve something, inaction or something of the kind. Number 13, the yajna in the mode of ignorance. Vidhihinam srishtanam mantrahinam dakshinam Shraddha-virahitam yajñam tamasam parichakshate. Any sacrifice performed without regard for the description of scripture, vidhi hinam. You remember this word vidhi? We heard it before. Ye shastra vidhim utsvijyam. Those who give up the shastra vidhi. So this is vidhi hinam. Those who do not follow the shastra vidhi without regard for the direction of scriptures, without distribution of prasada. Every time there is a yajna, there is a function, then what is the last thing is? Prasada. That's why everyone comes. So there is here, asrishtannam. You know, there is no distribution of sanctified food. And then, without chanting the Vedic hymns, mantra hinam. You cannot do a sacrifice without the mantras. Because the mantras, they connect us through the sound to the Supreme Lord. You will hear in the end, Om Tat Sat. This mantra has to be used in the yajna. Otherwise, you know, we are not addressing anybody in the yajna. We are just doing something on the physical platform. But to do things in the yajna on the physical platform, just to put ghee in the fire and grains in the fire, that is not going to bring any result. You need the mantras. So there has to be mantra. And then adakshinam, any sacrifice where in which there is no remuneration to the priest. Whenever there is a sacrifice of whatever form, the person who is facilitating that sacrifice has to be given dakshina. Otherwise it is incomplete. It is in the mode of ignorance. We are not being grateful. We are not recognizing the actual agent that has actually made the sacrifice possible. And without faith, shraddha virahitam. So without faith is considered to be in the mode of ignorance. And Srila Prabhupada explains that faith in the mode of darkness or ignorance is actually faithlessness. So here in the mode of ignorance, there is no faith, there is no knowledge, there is no knowledge of the methods, there is no faith in the method, there is no faith in the goal, and so on. So Prabhupada gives some practical example here. So we should avoid this, and we have to analyze this, because what kind of yajna do we do? We do sankirtan yajna. Nishinga yajna, we do Nishinga yajna, we do Japa yajna, at the time of marriage there is a yajna, yes, at the time of initiation. So, you know, if you have an initiation without feast afterwards, so you are missing something. If you don't give the dakshina, that's why at the time of initiation, we go around and we collect. So there has to be dakshina, there has to be prasada. So you know this, that faith in the mode of darkness or ignorance is actually faithlessness. And this is going to be the same for all the items which are going to come. When it's in ignorance, it means it's not even there. Like determination in ignorance means no determination. So all the items in the modes are going to be like this. When it comes to ignorance, well, it's not even there, but to speak of some qualities. Then, We enter a longer section which is about austerity. I think it's from 14 to 19. Not even more. It's 14 to 22, actually. From 14 to 22, we will talk of austerity. And first Krishna is going to give the definition of austerity. In verses 14, 15, 16, he will say there are three kinds of austerity. What are the kinds of austerity? Body, mind, and speech. He spoke for the second time! We still have another one who never spoke. Will you speak? Did Adipurush make him speak? No. He hasn't even spoken. Rakesh also is a little silent. Less silent, but a little silent. Mukunda Prabhu made him speak?
Yeah.
First class. What did you say? Was it in passion, goodness, ignorance?
Transcendental mantra.
Transcendental mantra? Good.
In class only he is quiet, otherwise he has a long
be discarded. So there is no respect and there is no worship. And because people do not worship the elders, well, they fill their life with debts, as we heard, because they are not worshipping, they are not being grateful, and they don't learn anything. When we worship the superiors, what happens?
Their virtues come to us.
They?
Their virtues.
Their virtues, yes. Their good qualities, their virtues, they give blessing. In the mode of goodness, people understand that we must get blessings. Everything goes by blessings. It's not by one's own strength. So there must be the Guru's blessings, Krishna's blessings, elders' blessings. And these blessings are obtained when we please them, when we are submissive, when we worship them, when we respect them, then we get their blessings and we get their qualities. They will bless us with all kinds of good knowledge and so on that they have. And they will give us good wishes. But if we disrespect them, then we are on our own. So this is very important. And then there is cleanliness, simplicity. So Prabhupada explains, we already heard about these things. And celibacy and non-violence. So this should be austerities of the body. There is a sentence here, he should not indulge in sex life outside of married life, for sex is sanctioned in the scripture only in marriage, not otherwise. This is called celibacy. So Prabhupada here has given celibacy for grihasthas, which is, you know, there is celibacy for the tyagis, the brahmacharis, the sannyasis, which means no sex life, and then there is sex life for the grihasthas, which is according to the rules and regulations. So also this sentence should not be misused here. If you just take this, you understand that brahmacharya and grihastha life means that it means sex life within marriage, not outside. But we already heard before that there is more than this. It's not just this. So we have to apply academic integrity here. That we have already heard before, that the purpose should be correct, and the sanskara should be performed, and all this. Then, 15, austerity of speech. Anudvega karamavakyam satyam priyahitam chayat svadhyaya bhyasanam chaiva vadmayam tapauchyate. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. So this is the austerity of speech, also kind of in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada explains, one should not speak in such a way as to agitate the minds of others. So Krishna has been preaching this in the Bhagavad Gita. You should not disturb others, you should not agitate them. However, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth for the instruction of his students. But such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students if he will agitate their minds. So the teacher or the preacher is supposed to agitate the people. You have to somehow shake them up so that they will come out of their ignorance. But we should be careful. The best is that they come and surrender. Then we can agitate them in different ways. Because they came, so we came, so you have to hear now. If you didn't come, you would have remained peaceful at home and you would never have learned so many things. But now, you know, so in that way. This is penance as far as talking is concerned. So If people are not asking for our advice, then we should not give it. But sometimes the preacher still will give because he wants to. He knows that they won't ask anyway. Besides that, one should not talk nonsense. The process of speaking in spiritual circles is to say something upheld by the scriptures. One should at once quote from scriptural authority to back up what he's saying. At the same time, such talk should be very pleasurable to the ear. So here Prabhupada is giving a holy instruction which is fitting for devotees in Krishna consciousness. This is how you do. And in general, the general principle is you should not agitate. But if they have come to hear, then you should agitate them a little bit at least. And for the purpose of convincing them to take a Krishna consciousness, you have to shake them up. Then one should not talk nonsense. And the Prabhupada explains it means you have to refer to Shastra. By such discussions, one may derive the highest benefit and elevate human society. There is a limitless stock of Vedic literature, and one should study this. This is called penance of speech. So, very interesting that this Swadhyaya is an austerity of the speech. There is outer, external speech, and there is inner speech. So when we study, sometimes we speak, and then we hear, or we read. So we are dealing with the speech, whether outside or inside, the sound. So this is an austerity of speech. No, it's an austerity of the mind. Verse 16. That's what is explained by Krishna. Because Prabhupada explained, what is the use of not talking if your mind is thinking of so much nonsense? In that sense, first there should be silence in the mind, then only there would be silence outside. So, it's not an austerity of speech as far as Krishna is concerned here. This is what he says. Mana prasada saumyatvam maunam atma vinigraha bhava samchudhirajeta tapomana samuchate. So here we have mana prasadaha, satisfaction of the mind. This is an austerity of the mind. We like it when our mind is all excited about so many things, no, but the austerity is to cool down, control the mind, bring it down, have it very peaceful. When the mind is peaceful and satisfied, then that is called austerity of the mind. Otherwise the mind just wants to run everywhere all the time. So we have to somehow control the mind and feel satisfied. Simplicity, this is called Somyatvam, and Prabhupada explains that this means being without duplicity towards others. Then there is gravity, self-control, purification of one's existence. These are all the austerities of the mind. So first, we study the satisfaction here. Prabhupada says, to make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can always be thinking of doing good for others. So this is an austerity of the mind. The mind will never be satisfied by cultivating selfish material desires. Never. So the austerity is to think for the good of others. This is in goodness. Then Prabhupada says, satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories. So instead of reading all kinds of exciting, passionate novels, we should put the mind in the scripture. Then there will be satisfaction, peace of the mind. Then regarding simplicity, Srila Prabhupada explains that the mind should be devoid of duplicity. Okay, so this we understood. Now gravity, that's the word that Prabhupada, he gave this translation for mona. Mona actually means keeping silence, right? Not speaking. So Prabhupada translated this by gravity. Because Prabhupada was never very much in favor of silence. Silence, when people would keep silence, some Mayavadi or some yogi would keep silence, Prabhupada said, good, he has nothing good to say anyway. Better keep silence. But as far as we are concerned, we have lots of good things to say. So silence for the devotees means not to talk about mundane things, not to talk nonsense. But speaking about Krishna, that is considered silence. Prabhupada says something else. What means gravity actually? To be grave. Sober. Yes. To be sober. Yeah, that's another word. Serious.
Mild.
Yes. Someone who is grave means thinks deeply. Yes, thinks deeply, it's serious. And opposite of frivolous. When somebody who just talks about everything all the time, what he thinks, what he feels, I feel like this, I think like this, I've seen this, I've seen that, I've been there. So this is the opposite of grave. Someone who is grave, you will not really know what he's thinking about unless he speaks about it. And he won't speak a lot because he's grave. Speak important things, yes. See things. It is said also gravity is concerned about seeing things philosophically, less emotionally. And not just expressing oneself to everybody all the time. So this is being grave. And we can only be grave if the mind is grave. That's why it's an austerity of the mind. If the mind is deep in thought, is fixed on Krishna, is in goodness, then we are not going to bubble all the time something. Self-control. And purification of one's existence. So, in other words, you have to the mind. How to purify the mind? We know is by putting it in contact with Krishna, with the mode of goodness, regulating, and so on. So these are the austerities of the mind. Words. And speech. Now we are going to see the austerities in the modes. Shraddhaya paraya taptam tapasta trividham narayi aphala kankshidir yuktai sattvikam parichakshate. This threefold austerity, so threefold refers to what we heard before, body, mind, and words. This threefold austerity, performed with transcendental faith by man, not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity in goodness. So whatever we have heard before, which sounded very good, but it can be performed in goodness and it remains good, but it can also be performed in passion and it can be performed in ignorance, and then it loses its quality of goodness. So when it is performed with transcendental faith, here we have Shraddhaya Paraya, not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, that is called austerity in goodness. So when there is the word Shraddhaya Paraya here, we must understand that the austerity aims, there is an understanding of God, there is an understanding of the Supreme, and the austerity aims at this Supreme. So the main constituents here of austerity in goodness is that there should be this transcendental faith and there should be nishkam, apala akamshivi. Nishkam means no desire for material benefit. So this should be, our study should be like this, our mind should be like this, our everything what we heard before. If it aims at the Supreme and it has no, it is not performed for material benefit, so it will be in goodness. Next, austerity in passion. Satkara mana pujartham tapodhyena chevaya kriyate taniha proktam rajasam chalamadruvam. Penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, praise, honor and worship is said to be in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. So this is here the austerity in the mode of passion. What is the impetus? There is an impetus here. Instead of being based on transcendental faith, wanting to achieve the Supreme, here it is done out of pride and for show. Only for show, to attract respect. And there are different kinds of respect. Bodily respect, people will offer some garland or they will bow down. So we are going to do austerities in order to attract people, or we are going to do austerities in order to be praised for that. So this is in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. So here there is the satkara mana pujartam. Satkara means to gain respect, and man means to gain honor, and puja means to gain worship. Prabhupada explains here, persons in the mode of passion arrange to be worshipped by their subordinates and let them wash their feet and offer riches. So we have to be very careful about this. There is a tinge of the mode of passion. Even though these are also spiritual practices, like the disciples, they will offer their wealth to the spiritual master. The disciples, they will worship the feet of the spiritual master, but not that the spiritual master should be eager to have his feet washed every day. That is very dangerous. It can become dangerous. Otherwise, these things are a tradition. Even in the villages in India, normally any guest who comes, there is immediately Abhishek on the feet, and they will wash the feet. But one should not become anxious to receive that kind of welcome. One should not perform austerity for this. One should not go to preach anywhere just to receive that kind of worship. Otherwise, there will be degradation in our consciousness. 19. Now we are at the mudha. Mudha grahena atmanuya pidaya kriyate tapaha parasyat sadhanartamha tattama samudahritam. Penance performed out of foolishness with self-torture, or to destroy or injure others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So here Srila Prabhupada explains what is foolish endeavor. What is foolish endeavor? Gives the example of Hiranyakashipu. What was foolish about his endeavor? Foolish endeavor means an endeavor to attain something which is not attainable. That is foolish. Hiranyakashipu wanted to be immortal. That's not possible. He wanted to keep his body forever. So that's not possible. There are, you know, there's a preset order of things. Material nature works by cycles. The body will be recycled. There's nothing you can do about it. So to do austerities, to remain alive forever in the same body, that is foolish. So to Prabhupada said, for something which is impossible, undergo penance, that is certainly in the mode of ignorance. Then self-torture. Any examples of self-torture? Hiranyakashipu, in one sense, also self-torture, is also an example of self-torture. Yes. Hooks and they pull chariots.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good example. Yes, so some people in South Africa, now you know in which modes of nature they are. They put hooks, you know, hooks. They put hooks in their skin with a rope.
In South India
they do that. In Sri Lanka also. Oh, very nice.
Especially in this Durga Puja time.
Durga Puja, now we understand. So they put hooks in the body and they pull ruts, some cards. Wow.
Yeah, I have seen in the Bangkok, Durga Puja time, some Indian people are there. They make a
Pierce.
And some are done.
They pierce.
Yes.
They pierce there, like the punks in the West. At least these ones want to achieve something. The punks do it for nothing. That is more in the mode of ignorance. Yes. We have seen also people who hang lemons on the body. I have seen that. If you go to the Kumbh Mela, you will find all kinds of strange austerities. They hang lemons. You know, lemon means the juice of the lemon is very pungent, and they hang lemons, so it's like their whole body is on fire. We have seen also, all over the world, there is this kind of austerity and ignorance. There is some countries, I don't remember, in Burma, I think, there is that sect, it's a community where the women, from the time they are children, they put kind of rings around the neck. They put rings around the neck and they grow, and their neck grows and grows and grows to being like a giraffe, you know. They have a neck long like this with a little head on the top. I saw last year, I was looking at something. So they grow a neck like this, and it's within their community, it's a sign of beauty. So they do that austerity to put these rings there, and it is said that when they remove the rings, their neck is so weak that it cannot keep the head, it cannot actually balance the head. In Japan also, or is it in China, I think, they have that tradition also, for the sake of beauty, to actually wear small shoes. They always put small shoes so that the feet do not grow. There is also no kind of austerities. This is all in the mode of ignorance. People are tortured. Walking on the coals. Yeah, walking on coals. But they don't feel. They don't feel. That is a different thing. So this is self-torture. All over the world, people are going to do some things. You know, even we heard that guy who was jumping from the airplane 500 times. This was self-torture. Obviously, after that, you know, his body in old age, he would suffer so much. Here there is the word Murha Grahenat Mana, which means with stubborn. Mudha grahena, with stubborn attachment. And they just become so determined and stubborn to do something for a ridiculous aim. And also there is austerity to destroy or injure others. People want to acquire some power just to destroy somebody. They can do some austerities just to destroy others, harm others. So this is all in the mode of ignorance. Now, the next section here. 20. Dātavyāmiti yaddānam dīyate nupakārine deshe kāle ca pātve ca taddānam sattvikam smṛtam. Now we are in dāna. Charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper place and time, and to a worthy person is considered, you can tell me, what kind of austerity of charity is this? Goodness. Yes, now we can recognize them. So this is charity. This is considered to be in the mode of goodness. So what is charity in goodness? We should understand here, because a devotee is naturally charitable. So first there is the sense of duty. Again, this is the motivation. The duty is the motivation. It is said in Shastra to avoid becoming attached to one's possessions, to evolve detachment. One should just give. So it's a duty. You just give. And then what is the next component? Without expectation of return. So here in India, people, in the Western countries, people have no idea that if you give, you will get back. So they give, some people don't give, but they don't know. But here in India, they have read the scripture. And they know that if you give, you will receive. In the West also, there is a little idea. So you give, so as you sow, so shall you reap. Listen, as you sow, so shall you reap. Whatever seeds you plant, you will get the crops. So if you give, you will receive. So this idea is in the mind. Oh, nice. Then I can get more. But if we give in order to receive, then we degrade our activities. This will not lead us to liberation. So there should be no idea of return. You give to give, that's all. Not to receive. And then there should be some discrimination of the time, place, and circumstance. So one thing is the proper purpose, duty, no expectation of return, and then the next is discrimination. It should be at the proper time, meaning it will create more auspiciousness. Here, remember, mode of goodness means we want to elevate ourselves. So what is a proper time? Occasion of the Lord's, on the Lord's appearance day, during Kartik, that's an auspicious time. People give usually when there is Purnima, some auspicious dates, on Ekadasi, on Dwadasi, these are good times to give. Then the place, where should we give? In Vrindavan. It's the best. We should give in Vrindavan. Or we should give in a Tirtha, in a holy place. Or in a temple. That's where you should give. But not to somebody. If you are in the temple, you have to give to the deity. You know, we should not receive charity in front of the deity. Or in front of a senior person. Because whenever there is a senior person, or the Lord is there, everything should go to Him. But we can give to Krishna in the temple, that's most auspicious. And who should be the recipient? To whom? Desha, Kala, Patra. Patra means the recipient. Who should receive that donation? So, of course, the best, Prabhupada says, charity given to a person engaged in spiritual activities is recommended. So we should give to a Vaishnava, to a preacher. Second best is the Brahmana, but if the Brahmana is not a Vaishnava, that is second best. We should give to the Vaishnava. Two things we can say here is that anything we do, there will be a result, but the result of giving according to this is that there will be a transcendental result. It will bring you up to the mode, it will elevate the gunas. That will be the result. But if you do it for the result, it will not elevate your gunas. You know, first, that's why Krishna first gave the purpose. Do it out of duty, without expectation of return. And do it on these days and so on. But another way to look at it, like for example, if you are going to give to a Vaishnava, any time is good, any place is good. Anything that is connected with Krishna and with the Vaishnava, there is nothing like this good time, good place and so on. So we should give the idea, this comes I think from the Garuda Purana, that we should give to someone who can protect the donor with knowledge. That's the idea. When we give to a person who is spiritually advanced and who can benefit us with spiritual knowledge. Because it is said in the scriptures, and people know in India, if you give donation to a qualified Brahmana, you will get 100,000 times back. Wow! If you give at the right time, the right place, to the qualified Brahmana, you give him 1 rupees, you get 1 lakh. Wow! Good. And if you give to a non-educated Brahmana, You give him 1 rupee, you get 2 rupees in return. Double.
It's a very high interest rate.
Huh?
Very high interest rate.
High interest rate. And if you give to others, you will get something in return. Something. But what is the defect with this? You'll have to come back to get the change. Therefore, do not give. Give to the Vaishnava. Give to the temple. Give to the Vaishnava. That will take one to Vaikuntha. But if you give to material person, even a Brahmin, you will have to come back. Yes. Yes? You should give to the beggars. Well, that's the next topic here. Give to the poor. Dangerous. But in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada gave us, he explained actually, Prabhupada gave a rule for Vrindavan. He said that if the beggar is running after you and pulling your clothes and making a whole scene and all, it's better not to give. Because it's not the proper recipient. According to, because you don't know, what is he going to do with the money, first of all? We should not give to recipients. I think it doesn't come and talk in this. I thought I read this somewhere. We should not give charity to someone who is going to engage it in self-gratification. It's dangerous, because that way we are getting involved with the other person's karma. We are sharing a part of the karma. But Prabhupada said in Vrindavan, you see, there are many beggars, they just sit the whole day. And either they chant, or they read, or they are absorbed in their own meditation. And they never ask for anything. They just sit. So Prabhupada said that those who are like that, you can give. Because there are many people who have come to Vrindavan without any resource, and they have taken that type of life. They have become beggars to stay in the dham, and they live in very austere conditions, either in small ashrams they live, or they live in very austere rooms and so on. So those who seem to be bona fide, who are peaceful, who do not demand, who are not aggressive, just sit in one place, you see them day after day after day after day. So you give. It's good. But if they are professional beggars who have come from Delhi, Calcutta, during Kartik, to make money in Vrindavan, what is the use? And mostly the money doesn't even... The money...
Beep
is allowed. It's okay. many times, you know, you should know in India, for those who feel compassion for these beggars, you should know that they are organized. And whatever money you give, it's not going to the child to whom you are giving. It's not going to the women with the little baby on the hip, you know. It's not going to go to her. They are exploited. They belong to gangs. There is one big guy in the back, and he's getting all the money. He's got hundreds of beggars under him. And I think things have improved maybe a little bit in India, but when I came many, many, many years ago, there were still so many beggars with mutilated limbs. And it is still, but it's less. I think the government has taken some action on that. But when I came in 1981 first time, oh, it was such a nightmare. When you would go to Kumbh Mela, you would go to any holy place, there was these lines of beggars with somebody has no hand, somebody has no arm, somebody has no foot, somebody has no leg. And you could see that the rest of the body is okay, it's perfect. And you could see children, the little children, no arm. He comes, he shows, I have no arm, you know, he's moving a little piece of arm there and he's begging, where is your arm? Well, the arm has been cut by somebody. So, of course, when you see somebody who has a disease or something, it's a little different. But so, the recipient of, for them, what to do? Better give them prasadam. That's what should be given to those ones. You give them something to eat, so they can eat it on the spot. And they don't have to turn it over to the person who is, you know, exploiting them. Because by giving to them, we continue that system. We engage that system. You know, when you see a little child at the age of 5 is coming and they do. So what will you do? Will you encourage him to grow like this and become that kind of person? Or will you tell him no? This is not good to do. You should try to find something else and give him some prasada. Sometimes that is their misfortune. Sometimes they do not accept.
That's kind of the test to see if they're actually begging. Because if they really need, if they actually.
It means he's not hungry. When he doesn't accept prasadam, it means he's fine. But sometimes you can see, if you sit in one place where there are beggars, if you sit there for a while, what you will see? All the kids are going to beg and for some time. And then they stop, and either somebody, two things you can see, is that somebody comes, and they all go around that person and he collects all the money. And he leaves them without anything. So that's one thing you can see. Or another thing you can see is at some point they stop and they play. They play, they have fun, they do all kinds of things like regular kids. And after some time, okay, next red light, they go. And then, but their faces change, like, completely. From one minute to the next, they look like a completely distressed person, and the next minute, they are happy, playing kids. So, you know, charity should be transcendental. At the same time, we should not become hard in the heart by just tzitzi, go. We should not become like this also. But because we have to understand, in any case, they are in a miserable position. Whether it is forced upon them, or whether they have chosen to do that, it's not a good position to be. But in any case, when we give transcendental charity, there is no, we don't have to wait for the proper day, for the proper place. This can be done anytime. Prabhupada says here, charity to the poor is sometimes given out of compassion. But if a poor man is not worth giving charity to, then there is no spiritual advancement. In other words, indiscriminate charity is not recommended in the Vedic literature. 21. Yattu pratyupakarartham phalam udishya va punaha dhiyate cha parikrishtam taddanam rajasamsmritam. But charity performed with the expectation of some return or with a desire for fruity results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. So how do we explain this here? Expectation of some return here. Prati upakara artam, for the sake of getting some return. Prabhupada explains this. There are two meanings here, all with a desire for fruitive results. So one is expecting some return in this life. You are hoping by giving the charity, you expect some fruit, some result in this life. And the desire for fruitive result is a desire in for the next life. People know. By giving charity in this life, sometimes you get some things in this life, but by giving big charity in this life, you can get swarga. By giving big, big amounts of charity, you can go to the heavenly planets. So, two kinds of result, in this life or in the next. That shouldn't be there. We should not express this. And what is something else here? In a grudging mood. Pariklishtam. In a grudging mood. Why grudging mood? Why have I spent so much in this way? You regret after first you give and then you regret. What a fool! Why did I give so much? So that's in the mode of passion. I should have asked for a discount. I should have given less. I should have done less. Or sometimes it says it is... this repentance can be there during or after giving. But there is another kind also, it says here, to give under some obligation at the request of a superior. Sometimes, you know, Gurudev says, why don't you give a donation? And the person doesn't really want to give the donation, but he has been asked to give, so he's little forced, he's forced somehow, forced to give, to keep his good reputation, to be in the good book. So this is also in the mode of passion. Prabhupada in this, it is in this purport that his warning of giving charity to institutions where sense gratification goes on. We should be very careful when we give charity to know exactly what they are going to do with the money. Because if they engage in sense gratification, we become implicated. Next is Adeshakale yaddanam apatrebhyascha diyate asatkritam avanyatam tattam samudharitam. And charity performed at an impure place, at an improper time, to unworthy persons or without proper attention and respect is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So here, what is this? Impure place, meaning you just give. You give. Impure places usually are places where sense gratification are going on. Or means it's the opposite of goodness. It's not in a dham, it's not in a temple, it's just some other place. Then inauspicious time. And then there is unworthy person. This is the Deshakala Patra. Unworthy person is someone who is going to make use of the donation for sense gratification. Prabhupada says, contributions for indulgence in intoxication and gambling are not encouraged here. That sort of contribution is in the mode of ignorance. Such charity is not beneficial. Rather, sinful persons are encouraged. So we should not encourage sin. And then there is another kind of donation in the mode of ignorance, which is you give to a proper person, but there is a defect while giving. One defect is asatkritam, without proper respect. You know, you are giving, but you don't respect the person. So that is not good. And there is avagyatam, without proper attention, you just give maybe some no respect, with disrespect, no proper attention, meaning that when you give there should be a whole mood with it, and you should be very precise, you should want to give, you should. So if all this is not there, then it is also contaminated by the mode of ignorance, the mode of darkness. Alright, so we will stop here. Any questions about this thing? So this is for us to apply.
Nuts in the mouth.
Alright, so we stop here. Tomorrow we will be finishing. There are a few verses left. And we will begin the 18th chapter, which happens to be the last chapter in the Bible.